interest of Michael N. Good morning. Is it Mr. Hanna?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Hanna, and I'm an attorney from the Douglas County Attorney's Office, here representing the state in this matter today.
And is it my understanding you're going to take 7 minutes here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Today, the state is asking this court to find that the separate juvenile court erred when it ordered the special When the separate juvenile court ordered a special prosecutor, as well as ordering the Douglas County Attorney's Office to be removed from the case. This morning, I intend to discuss the reasons why a special prosecutor can be ordered and how none of those reasons were present in the case at hand.
Before we get there, what substantial right of the state was affected by the order removing the county attorney's office and appointing a special prosecutor?
Your Honor, in this case, the substantial right that was affected by the state is essentially the right to prosecute. In terms of juvenile proceedings, the state's rights come from the parents' rights as dictated in interest Noah B. These rights have been stated to be so great and so important that in interest Noah B, this court found that the state does have a right to adjudicate cases. Because when the state adjudicates cases, it's for the purpose of protecting the welfare and care of all juveniles within the state.
Well, in this case, a special prosecutor was appointed, and so would that special prosecutor not represent the state, and thus wouldn't the states still have the ability to prosecute cases?
Your Honor, I would disagree with that. The special prosecutor was wrongfully appointed in this case, and if we look at the statute...
Well, I understand that's your position, but we have to resolve jurisdiction first. And so we have to identify a substantial right of the state that was affected. What I'm struggling with is, you're saying, well, the state doesn't have the right to prosecute cases if the county attorney's office is removed, but doesn't it still have the right, it just has a different lawyer?
No, Your Honor, because if we look at the statute 23-1205, the special prosecutor statute dictates what a special prosecutor can do. In that statute, a special prosecutor can only help with an investigation and or appear or do a trial. In this case, the court ordered a special prosecutor for the entire case. As we know, in juvenile cases, we have other matters that goes beyond just an investigation or one hearing or a trial.
So is your proposition that under 23-1205 there cannot be a special prosecutor in a juvenile matter?
A special prosecutor can be limited for the purpose of an investigation, an appearance, or a trial, but not for the proceeding of an entire case.
What's an appearance?
An appearance, in my opinion, Your Honor, would be showing up for one sort of hearing, and we have to look at the statute in total. The statute allows a special prosecutor in 5 different circumstances. 2 of those circumstances include an absence or a sickness. An appearance would be if a county attorney was sick or couldn't make the hearing, a special prosecutor could then appear on behalf of the county attorney.
Well, the county attorney has a conflict of interest.
Well, if the county attorney has a conflict of interest, the court can find that conflict of interest and order a special prosecutor, or pursuant to that statute, the county attorney can request a special prosecutor. In this case, the record is absent of any conflict of interest. The judge, the county attorney, the defense counsels, the guardian ad litem, and the attorney for the Department of Health and Human Services never brought up once a conflict of interest in this case.
I'm trying to follow this argument. Is it now your position that the scope of the duties of the special prosecutor are defined by the reason that the first person is out?
The scope of the special prosecutor is limited to what the Nebraska statute has dictated to be. And that scope is limited to just an appearance, working on an investigation, or for a trial.
But going to Judge Friedenberg's question, if there's a conflict of interest, and your position is they can only do these 3 things, Who does the other things involved in an action?
Well, if there's a conflict of interest, a special prosecutor can be ordered, but it has to be noted that conflict of interest has to be imputed to the entire county attorney's office, which did not happen in this case. Again, in this case, there was no conflict of interest, and nothing in the record suggests that there is.
So you're back to answering my question again, right? So if it's a conflict of interest, the special prosecutor can do everything.
If the court finds that it's so and creates and sends down an order saying such, then yes.
Is your argument that the special prosecutor, the appointment of the special prosecutor, was sort of null and void, and everything the special prosecutor did is somehow invalid?
Yes, Your Honor. The special prosecutor should have never been ordered. As we know from the statute, there are only five reasons why a special prosecutor can be ordered. The reasons are due to absence, sickness, conflict of interest, disability, and upon the request of a county attorney. None of those have been present in this case. Rather, the reason why the county attorney was removed from the case and a special prosecutor was ordered was due to the dissatisfaction of the trial court judge.
Was there some suggestion that one or both of the parents intended to call an attorney from the county attorney's office as a witness? And how does that factor into our analysis?
Your Honor, there is a suggestion that that did occur at the protective custody hearing on March 21st, and it factors in the analysis in the fact that the county attorney was, the judge did not allow defense counsel to call the county attorney to stand because the county attorney represents the state in this matter. And that goes to show that there was really no conflict of interest in this case, but rather it's this county attorney representing the state as any attorney represents their client.
So if you were, if you were successful on your argument with respect to the propriety of appointing a special prosecutor, what would be the relief that you would seek in this case?
The relief that the state seeks in this case is to reverse the trial court ruling and allowing the county attorney to remain on the case.
Which would mean what? We go back and start over?
Not necessarily start over. We're still at the protective custody stage at this hearing. It would just go back to where we left off at the protective custody, in which the state will then obtain service on the parents.
How many times can the state start over?
Your Honor, the right to dismiss and file a case is up to the state. These are more like civil cases where the court dismissed the cases without prejudice, so the state does have the right to refile those cases.
And this child has been in protective custody since 2016?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And still is?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Without a hearing?
Correct, Your Honor, in the sense, but there is a new filing and a protective custody has been done and has been continued. It looks like I've run out of time, Your Honors, if I may conclude.
You may.
Your Honors, at this time, the state does have a substantial right in prosecuting these cases, and none of the factors defined by Nebraska statutes has been present in the record to show that special prosecutor should have been ordered. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. O'Brien, good morning to you.
My name is Nick O'Brien. I am Senior Certified Counsel for the Appellee Cross Appellant, Heather Norman.
And you are going to take?
3.5 minutes, Your Honor.
3.5 minutes.
And I would request a 1 minute warning.
Okay.
The state in this case made the analogy that due process is a shield, not a sword. I say whether due process is a shield, a sword, or a shovel, it doesn't matter unless you pick it up and use it. A parent has a due process right to a prompt detention hearing after an ex parte order is issued placing custody of their child with DHHS. That right to a prompt detention hearing comes with rights to notice of that hearing. Here on April 9th, 2018, the juvenile court held a detention hearing on a petition to terminate Heather Norman's parental rights. Prior to that time, no service of process was issued on Heather Norman properly in accordance with due process.
Prior to that time, did your client file a motion to recuse the juvenile court judge?
Yes, Your Honor.
And does the filing of such a motion affect whether you can still maintain a lack of service in this case under our precedent?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
And for what reason?
The filing of a motion to dismiss was filed as in place of a special appearance.
I'm asking about the motion to recuse. You asked that the trial court judge be recused, and does that not invoke the powers of the court such that any objections to issues with service or personal jurisdiction would be waived?
Your Honor, I think that the motion to recuse, as paired with the motion to dismiss, should be read as a special appearance and shouldn't waive any objections to service of process.
Are special appearances still recognized?
No, they're not, Your Honor, which is why the motion to dismiss was filed in its place. The issue is that on April 9th, there was a detention hearing in which the court heard arguments on the detention of Michael N. Michael N. has been in custody of DHHS since July of 2016. Prior to that time, there was no service of process to Heather Norman. Whether there was an issue of at the time of the motion to dismiss or not, at the time that detention hearing occurred, there needed to be service of process. That was not made, and therefore this case should have been dismissed, and that detention hearing should not have occurred.
Briefly, if you can, what is the factual reason why the child was removed from the home?
The factual reasons alleged were that the child was malnourished. When the mother brought the child to a hospital, it was determined that the child was in danger at that time.
So where does the best interest of the child come into this in a due process or the parent's equation?
The best interest of the child is to get a chance to reunite with its parents.
And your client knew where the child was the entirety of the time, is that correct?
That is incorrect, Your Honor. Heather Norman knew that Michael N. was in Omaha, Nebraska, but didn't know where in what way they could contact the child.
Didn't know it was with the child was with the Department of Health and Human Services or anything of that nature?
No, Your Honor.
Were they in contact with him?
There was a caseworker who was in contact with Heather Norman at some point in 2016. Other than that, there's been no contact.
There's no indication that Heather Norman asked the caseworker, where is the child?
There's a testimony of a conversation in which the caseworker talked to Heather Norman, which at trial was represented that Heather Norman had not asked to see the child. But the only thing we get from that conversation is that that Heather Norman had a conversation with the caseworker, didn't at that time request to see the child, but hasn't been in contact with the caseworker since then.
And had she asked with respect to the whereabouts, whether or not she had an interest in visiting?
The caseworker did not ask that question.
No, I beg your pardon. Did Heather Norman ask about the whereabouts of the child?
Not at that time, no.
Did your client indicate she would not return to Nebraska?
No, she did not.
What is the ultimate relief that is sought by this appeal?
This case should have been dismissed at motion to dismiss on the grounds that Heather Norman's due process rights had been violated. I'm asking this court to reverse the trial court's detention order and dismiss the case.
Why would dismissal be the appropriate remedy? If what she's asking for and what she's complaining about is that there's been a detention hearing where she didn't have notice, why wouldn't the remedy be, well, let's have a detention hearing, let's serve her, let's get this case on the right track? Even if we agree with your argument, why is that not the appropriate remedy?
The failure to serve notice is just one part of the issue. The broader issue is due process. And at the point in which the child has been in the custody of DHHS for a number of years without a detention order ever being held with proper notice, that goes to Heather Norman's rights to due process as a more general matter than just notice. In addition, other actions by the court in providing case law to the prosecution, in stepping in and being impartial in this case, indicate that Heather Norman's rights to due process have been violated in a more substantial way than just a failure to notify.
So the relief that she seeks is a dismissal of the case and to visit, to be reunited with the child?
Yes, Your Honor. The, The issue is due process.
I suspect you've gone way over 3.5 minutes.
Oh, have I? I apologize. Then I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Murphy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Again, I would ask to be notified, please.
You can have.
And I have 3.5
you,
minutes.
You may have 3.5 minutes.
Thank you, sir. May it please the court, I am Christina Murphy with the law firm of Marks, Claren, Richards, and I have a cold. I apologize. I represent Robert N., father of the detained child, Michael. In criminal cases, the liberty interests of adults are protected by speedy trial and double jeopardy. However, parents and juveniles are not afforded these protections in juvenile court cases. Nebraska has held that parents are afforded due process rights in juvenile court cases, but when those rights are violated, what is the remedy? In the case before you, the trial court and the state have concluded that violation of due process rights have absolutely no ramifications in juvenile court cases. How else can we explain that Robert has been denied the right to parent his child, Michael, for more than 2 years without being given proper notice of the hearing detaining his child? In re RG, in re Carmelo G, in re Michael N, established once and for all that in Nebraska, due process requires parents to be given notice of detention hearings. However, when the state failed to give proper notice to Robert N, it simply dismissed, refiled, not once, but twice. And when the trial court was presented with evidence that proper notice was not given, it simply detained the child anyway. This is truly an awful scenario that would shock the conscience of any parent. We are asking that clear instruction and guidance be given to the state and to trial judges that not only does due process require notice of detention hearings be given to parents, but also that if due process is not afforded a parent, that this court set forth consequences. What should those consequences be? We submit that the consequences must be the restoration of the substantial right of a parent to parent their child and the substantial right of a child to be parented by their own parent.
Does the best interest of the child have any bearing on that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But ultimately, it's a substantial right of every child to be parented by their own parent. All we're asking is that they be restored to their parent. In other words, we're asking...
Even if that doesn't include the best interest of the child?
Absolutely, sir.
So it doesn't matter if the best interest of the child, send the parent, the child back to the parent.
The court could have held that the case continues, but not be detained with the state. Could have sent the child back to the parents, could
well,
have given the parents.
The factual basis apparently behind this is that the child showed up, maybe this is an unfair characteristic, but was literally being starved to death. Now, is there a way, can you go through mediation or something? Is there an obligation on everybody on each side of this to find a better way to handle this?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Did your client know where the child was?
My client knew that the child was detained at the hospital. He remained in the state for 2 days, hoping the child would be returned because he did not live here. When ultimately it became clear the child was not going to be returned, he did not have family, friends, or a residence here, he continued on his trip across the country. He knew the child had been left in the state of Nebraska in the care of the state of Nebraska, but not specifically where he was.
After he left the state of Nebraska, was he aware the child was still in Nebraska?
He assumed that.
Did he have contact with anyone?
He was contacted one or two times in the 2016 case by the caseworker, and that was all.
Can you make any indications he's going to come back to Nebraska to address this issue or check on the child's well-being?
I don't know, sir. Your Honor, we are asking that this court set down firm instructions and timelines. If I could just finish.
You may finish your thought.
Firm instructions and timelines regarding notice to the parents, and if those instructions and timelines are not met, that the case must be dismissed with prejudice and the child restored to the parents. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartling, good morning to you.
Good morning, Judge.
And you have 7 minutes.
Thank you, sir. May it please the court, Petter Bartling, court-appointed special prosecutor in this case, representing the state of Nebraska on behalf of Michael N. The court has heard a lot of grand concepts this morning about this case, but this case is really boiled down to very simple concepts. On July 20th, 2016, Robert and Heather came to Omaha, Nebraska. They dropped their son, Michael, off at Children's Hospital. The child was diagnosed as suffering from extreme malnutrition, and the next day, the hospital admitted the child. The child has been here since that time. In exhibit number 9, which was received into evidence at the August 9th hearing, there is a recitation of the chronology of this case and the events of this case, including but not limited to the statement of the mother that the mother was not feeding Michael as much as she could or should due to financial concerns. On July 25th of 2016, the Douglas County Attorney's Office, acting on behalf of the state, filed an ex parte motion and Michael was detained on an ex parte basis. Robert and Heather left Omaha the same day, July 21st. They have never come back. They have been contacted by the caseworker. Both of them have said they are not coming back. That's in exhibit number 9. And none of them have made any efforts to come back to visit this child, to engage the state of Nebraska, to engage the Department of Health and Human Services, or to reunite with their son. What you have here is a lot.
I beg your pardon. After the departure of the parents, does the record show any ability by, I'll just say, the state caseworker and so forth to be able to contact the parents?
Yes, you have a recitation contained both in the evidentiary record at the hearing on April 9th as well as exhibit number 9. Those documents reflect that the family permanency specialist slash caseworker made contact through email. The contact was limited. Made contact telephonically. The contact was limited. And in those conversations, the caseworker asked for a physical address to provide notice of Nebraska court proceedings to the parents. The parents declined. It's very clear that this is an abandonment scenario. This isn't a scenario where we need to dress the case up and talk about creating a new doctrine, which is what you're being asked to do as a relief mechanism here. You're being asked to create a due process bar to proceedings when a parent doesn't get notice that a parent deems sufficient. In other words, the reference by Robert's attorney to double jeopardy, the reference to speedy trial, is exactly what they're seeking. They're seeking, if this doesn't happen, meaning notice in a sufficient time, then the state is not allowed to proceed against a parent. But keep in mind, look at the totality of this record. This has been nothing but a cat and mouse game from its inception. The parents know their child is here. They took the child to the hospital. The parents left voluntarily, never came back. The parents got notice, albeit not a ton, from the caseworker, your child is here. Would you like to engage services? Declined. Thereafter, the parents received court-appointed counsel, two of whom are in this courtroom. Those counsel appeared at hearings from 2016 through 2018, representing their clients' interests.
Does any of this excuse the state's obligation to serve process?
Absolutely not. It does not. However, if the parents are engaged in active efforts to avoid process, which they appear to be through exhibit number 9, then that is the counterbalance to that. The judge appointed a special prosecutor.
That goes to the remedy. If the court were to say, well, the process should have been served and it wasn't, then what path do we go on? Is there one and only path, as the appellees are suggesting?
No. The appellees, 2 points on that. Number one, the appellees are suggesting a speedy trial analogy in that sense.
Well, they're suggesting return the child. That is the answer, and I'm exploring, as has the Chief Justice, are there other paths in the absence of proper service?
Well, there was proper service. It happened on April 2nd.
If the court were to conclude there was not proper service, are there alternative remedies?
Well, the child is here in care. The child remains medically fragile, and I would suspect that the state of Nebraska, if this court were to determine there was improper service and ordered this case dismissed on remand, the state would refile a pleading because the circumstances haven't changed. Essentially, the parents have weaponized notice to say we're required to get notice because of our fundamental constitutional interest.
Right, I mean, I understand your thesis. They're wanting notice, but they're ducking. So now, if the court were to say nevertheless, because we're in the due process business, that the efforts weren't sufficient to satisfy due process, what would be a good outcome under the law?
Well, I don't know if I can answer that because I don't fundamentally agree with the question. At the point in time when the JV 18 docket came into existence, the parents did receive notice. The issue that the parents are raising has already been addressed twice. It's been addressed by the Court of Appeals, most recently in order dated May 10th of this year, where the court stated that the juvenile court acted promptly on our remand from In re Michael End, the first version. So that issue has been decided. I have, in my brief, a suggestion of mootness.
You're saying it's not even on deck?
No. No, it's a red herring. It is an absolute red herring.
Can I ask a question about what authority you're relying on under 23-1205 that supports your appointment in this case?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, to answer a question that was asked during Mr. Hanna's argument, it's a fiefdom issue. The Douglas County attorney raised this issue because I think their perspective is they have egg on their face. The judge clearly made a ruling, not under conflict, but under the prong of the statute that talks about disability. There are a number of sites in my brief on that point, but the judge did say the judge was concerned that the parents receive full process, active notice, and the judge also expressed some, I think she called them reservations, about the county attorney's filing and refiling
the case.
How
can that fit under the disability?
Well, I think that the court clearly didn't think the county attorney was effectuating its duties and wanted to bring in another attorney who would.
Is it your position that the court's dissatisfaction with the job that the county attorney is doing allows her to fire the county attorney's office and appoint a special prosecutor?
In the record of the hearing on the 27th, I believe the court addressed that and stated the court wasn't dissatisfied with the attorney. The court was concerned that the process itself, the integrity of the process, wasn't being honored because the county attorney wasn't effectuating its duty to achieve that service.
What's the difference between what I asked and what you just said?
Well, I think that what you asked is more of a personal assessment by the judge as to the performance, and what I'm saying is more professional assessment. In other words, county attorney has legal obligations, one of which is to serve notice to the parents for the reasons that the other parties have stated. The county attorney, for whatever reason, didn't achieve that. The court appoints a special prosecutor on the 27th, and service is achieved on the 2nd.
Could the special prosecutor have been appointed for purposes of effectuating service and nothing else?
Perhaps. That wasn't an issue that the judge addressed. And I think the secondary question, and this was brought up in Mr. Hanna's argument, was that at the hearing on the 21st of March, counsel for Robert requested in open court and on the record the opportunity to examine the deputy county attorney who was prosecuting that case and representing the Douglas County Attorney's Office. Perhaps that's what also triggered a secondary appointment of special prosecutor in this case. And there was a dialogue between Robert's counsel and the court where the court asked, are you, Robert's counsel, seeking the appointment of a special prosecutor? So that dialogue was had in open court on the record.
If we were to find that your appointment was illegitimate, where does that leave us?
Where does that leave the court? Well, the court then needs to take up the issue of whether the service that the special prosecutor achieved was valid. And if the service was valid, the child has been detained pursuant to the protective custody hearing on April 9th, then one would arguably assume that the ball would be handed off to the state of Nebraska in some other form, whether that would be the Douglas County Attorney's Office, the Attorney General's Office. It would depend on further rulings from this court as to whether my appointment was illegitimate or whether there was a conflict or my appointment was illegitimate simply because there was no disability.
Would we be then focusing on the procedure in 18-382?
We're in uncharted territory because 23-1205 doesn't give much guidance. There isn't a large body of case law that discusses the context of those appointments. But it is the controlling statute on this topic, so my opinion would be that that would be the statute.
I'm sorry, and I was referring to the juvenile case, 18-382, so that would be the scope of our inquiry after the remand.
I think the court, the scope is dictated first and foremost by 23-1205, and then any juvenile code would be beneath that. That would be the order of priority.
If we were to adopt your view of the disability term in 23-1205, would that pose a problem for judges remaining impartial? If judges have the ability to evaluate the work that's being done by the county attorney and say, well, you're not doing this to my satisfaction or you're not doing it correctly, how is the judge not crossing a line from neutral to an advocate?
Well, again, in my opinion, in the opinion of the special prosecutor, it's not a personal assessment by the judge. Judges have threshold issues that they assess all the time, one of which is jurisdiction, one of which is venue. They address these things and they expect the attorneys to demonstrate them as part of the initial or predicate part of a proceeding. The judge appeared here because there are no specific findings, there's no order laying out findings. What we have is an inference from the record and the judge's comments over the course of two hearings. But the judge here appears to be saying there is a baseline that the county attorney must achieve in order to proceed with the detention hearing, and that is service. The county attorney, within the context of the JV 16 and the JV 17 case, for reasons that are unknown, did not proceed with that service. And within the context of the JV 18 case, it appeared to the judge that the pattern was going to continue. And because the pattern was going to continue, the judge intervened and said, there won't be this pattern again because both the parents and the state have a vested interest in having this process proceed with judicial integrity. And that is, to answer your question, Justice Miller-Lerman, that is one of the case law earmarks, if you will, for the appointment of a special prosecutor. If we're concerned about the integrity of the system, if we're concerned that we're doing it right, I think that's what we had here, Justice, is she wanted to get it right. And within 12 days of that appointment, it was done right.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day.